The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I am here at Brock University, but more specifically, I am at one of the most impressive wine libraries in all of Canada, maybe the largest one, like 44,000 bottles. And I am joined now by the wine cellar manager and operations manager for the Cool Climate Oenology and Viticultural Institute, or CCOVI, here in Brock, Taylor McGee. Taylor, first off, how much did I screw up and miss in terms of your current resume here?
Almost nothing. You did a great job. That was one of the best introductions I've ever had.
Now, okay, you're sure? Because, well, I mean, first, the name is easy. As someone who screws up all names, but then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to screw up Taylor McGee, but wait till I screw up part of just the title.
Well, you didn't do Taylor, you didn't do Tyler, so that was the first good start. Mm-hmm. Also, McGee is also a common one as well, so got to get that A in there as well. Yeah. So you did a great job.
Let's start with the library. Tell people a little bit about what about the size of it and just the history of it.
Absolutely. So this is definitely the fun side of my job, let's say. Not that any part of my job is not fun. I manage a lot of the day-to-day operations here at the Institute. However, managing the cellar is something that I love to call home. So the cellar is a revolving collection of wines. So at the Institute here, we have three main pillars. We have research, we have outreach, and we have continuing education. So all of those wines are stored downstairs, including our student-made wines as well. But the wine library wines is an exclusive part of the cellar. We're sitting at about 2,000 bottles of that right now, and that is dedicated to ageability in wine. So it's to kind of demonstrate the potential for aging wines, specifically within Canada, for those wines.
I love the fact that the wine library started back in the late 80s, established in 1988 by a club of local wine enthusiasts.
Correct.
A, I would love to have hung out with those people. And I was wondering if you could just sort of, I don't know what you know about the history of that, but also how far along it's come since then.
Yeah, it was a group of winemakers, wine enthusiasts, some of the pioneers of our industry here getting together. And it was actually called the Ontario Wine Library to start. And it was simply an initiative to get together to a holding cell for wines that we had here. So the cellar downstairs was built in the late 90s. So once we had it there, and Covey is kind of that in-between spot for winemakers. Anyone in the wine world within Canada, we're kind of the home for them for certain things. So once we had the cellar, it created an opportunity for us to actually hold wines down there. I mean, it wasn't until the late 90s that it was developed into the Canadian Wine Library, because obviously we have grape growing regions across just Ontario. So that's kind of the history where it became that. And then we kind of made it a bit more formal as we moved along here and actually developed a board of directors, a library collections committee, a more sustainable system so that we can meet at least once a year, go through the wines, go through submissions. We do a call out for wines every single year, at least once a year. We go through those submissions, and then our collections committee meets. They determine what goes into the wine library. And then we do fun things like this, podcasts and other initiatives to kind of get it out there. And now that it is out there, we have people requesting wines fairly regularly to be tasted within tasting groups and conferences and other fun things.
Let's first start. You mentioned education. How important is this library, not only to the current students of Brock, but just in terms of helping the next generation of future Ontario Canadian winemakers?
For sure. It falls under education for us. It also falls under our outreach portfolio of the Institute. So part of that is getting information back into the hands of grape growers, winemakers, the industry in general, public as well. The initiative with the wine library is to kind of see what our wines here in Canada can do over time. And there's been such a positive initiative, a positive everything coming out of this. So in terms of the outreach and education side of things, it really gives people the opportunity to see what, you know, our wines can do over time.
Well, let's go there for a second. I wanted to tell a quick story, because I imagine, actually before my quick story, and I promise I'll try to make it fast, I imagine that one of the great things about this library is to shatter the stereotype or the myth that, oh, Ontario, young region, sure, you do sweet wine and you can do some Chardonnays and Rieslings, but you're not going to make a red wine that 15 years from now is going to be evolving and maybe even drinking better upon its release. I imagine that's one of, even if it's not one of the main goals, one of the unintended consequences of what this library can be.
To your point, I think it gives wineries an opportunity to show how versatile their wines are, because I would agree that a lot of our wines are tasting well almost right away, like upon bottling and in the industry. But it also has the potential to age. Things like, you know, Riesling, almost every red, Chardonnay in particular as well, has so much potential to develop and evolve over time. So I think, you know, while they are drinkable now more so, it's also a possibility for them to develop over time. And I think that's where the wine library can come in to showcase. And when we showcase these kinds of wines, we did one at I4C, the local Chardonnay celebration last summer. The reception was overwhelming, and the opportunity for general public and industry to taste these wines after 20, 25 years is super exciting, and people get really, really excited about it.
It's also one of the easiest proof of just the quality, not only of the winemakers, but the viticulture and the soil here and, you know, and everything else, is that, oh, okay, here's a 25-year-old bottle of Chardonnay that's evolved but is drinking beautifully. It's almost like proof of concept that, oh, yeah, this happens in other parts of the world, and it absolutely happens here as well.
Absolutely. And it's fun for me to be a part of our outreach initiatives, things like Experts Tasting, I4C, Grape and Wine Festival. And there's such a common theme that happens when, you know, we do put our wines not up against international wines, but, you know, essentially comparing and seeing where we're at. And a lot of the topic that comes up, at least when I talk to winemakers, is that we don't need to prove anything anymore. Like, we are here as an industry. The wines that are being produced out of Canada and Ontario are here, and they are producing really well, whether being drank right now or for the potential for aging. But yeah, it definitely is a reminder to say that Ontario wines are definitely here.
It's more, I guess it's probably more or less about a competition and more about storytelling, that if, you know, people that buy lots of wine, or if you have sommeliers from restaurants and they're trying some of these wines, and then they taste the wine, and now they can tell the story to other people, and then it sort of gets passed on. So you're right. We don't need proof. The proof of concept's been here for ages. It's more just almost as a tool to help with the storytelling.
Absolutely, and that is what we're here for. There was a unique opportunity at Experts Tasting, an event that we host here on campus, and we had back vintages and current vintages as a part of that tasting. And there was a very cool scenario where we had wines, Chardonnay and Riesling, that were in the tasting itself, and they were tasting 10 years apart. So we had the 99, we had the 2010 and 2020 all tasting next to each other. So back to your storytelling, it was an opportunity for us to bring in the previous winemaker and the current winemaker to talk about what they did on those particular years. And it's information at the end. And that's what Covey is here for, is to provide a place where that information gets brought out, and it's a learning tool for everybody.
You might not have any specific examples. I just thought about this because you bring in winemakers all the time. Any stories where they felt awesome about trying one of their wines they haven't tried in ages, or a time when they were disappointed, they couldn't believe it had turned or had gone bad? Because, you know, a lot of winemakers, they're not afraid to show their opinion, nor should they be.
Absolutely. No, there was a lot of fun. So we brought in all the current winemakers to taste through all of the wine library wines that we had down there under their specific label. And it is fun to hear them talk about, like, how that harvest was. I think it's more of a, you know, hanging your hat on how that harvest went and whether it was challenging or not and what came out of it kind of thing. And it was an opportunity for them to show how stellar of a wine they were able to make in such a challenging year. I would say that's a more of a common one that comes up. But it's also a time to reminisce and remember, you know, certain situations and how a particular harvest went. It's, for them, it's fun to reminisce about that, because when those kinds of things come up in the future, it's a learning tool for them. at least from what I can tell.
Having the winemaker try on their reds, the 20 versus 21.
Absolutely.
And just such a different story between those two vintages.
For sure. And it's fun for them to see, like, they're like, oh man, we only have two bottles of this in our cellar at the winery. Like, you guys have, you know, let's just say a case of that down here, and we're able to utilize that for them. It's a cool, the cellar is temperature controlled, it's humidity controlled. And it's really the perfect place to house wines, which is a perfect opportunity for winemakers.
Another thing is so important is having a library of wines, because it's something you don't often see, especially a lot of New World places. I think Flat Rock, they do a great job. They've got a good cellar, a good library. I've seen, you know, from 20 plus years old, but that's not the norm. And on one level, on a very just... You know, not even about the mysticism of wine, just on administration of life, is that, oh, here's a place where you can actually store it, because some places maybe don't have the square footage for it.
And winemakers are definitely all over it, because it is, like I said, a safe place for them to store the wine in. And it's an opportunity for them to not only place their wines here, and the wine does remain the property of the wineries. They could always come back to us and say, we want to use this for XYZ event kind of thing, but it is available to the industry as well, and it's, you know, one or two less cases that they don't have to keep track of in their wineries. And like I said, it is hard to find space in the wineries to kind of store wine for a long period of time, so to be able to have a place like our cellar where it's ideal conditions and available to the public, it's a huge opportunity for these wineries, because we host a lot of tours down there. We do a lot of different tastings within the industry. It's great promotion for them and a great opportunity.
It's funny, we were sort of talking about this, but because you were giving me a tour of the library, and they're like, no, hold off that. There must sometimes be a difference in attitude about giving a case of wine, because that's, you know, that's still money. That's still time and effort. And all wineries, they got rent. Yeah. You know, they've got payroll to meet. But I imagine sometimes the winery owner versus the winemaker must view the transaction of giving a case of wine to you guys, they may view it a little differently.
Money is obviously a factor for all the wineries, and it's tough for especially the, you know, let's just say the smaller wineries, even medium-sized wineries, to, you know, let's just say sacrifice a case, but they're essentially not, because it is the property of them and it's essentially a holding cell for them. If a winemaker of a particular winery were to come up to me and say, we need that case back for this event that we plan on hosting, it's all good for that sense. So there's not a whole lot of risk, but you're 100% right that the winemakers are all over these kinds of things, because they want to, it's a flex for them essentially, where they're able to submit their wines into this. And if it gets accepted, they're able to now say that to the industry, it was accepted by the Library Collections Committee as a potentially ageable wine for a long period of time. And then in 10 years down the road, when we go to try this wine at something like I4C or Experts Tasting, and it's tasting exceptionally well, it's a huge flex for them to be able to say, I made that 10, 15, 20 years ago, and it's still holding up. But on the flip side, they are running a business, and of course the owners could say, nah, we need to sell that case. So we totally respect that.
Yeah, it's short-term pain for long-term gain is really what it's about. As you mentioned, flex, you throw this wine away, it's opened, or some of it's tried at an event 9 years later, and it's drinking beautifully. That is promotion.
But absolutely.
At the time, it's like, well, we just lost $780 of product.
Absolutely.
But hopefully we can make it up down the stretch.
Yep.
There was one real big moment for me when I realized the ageability of wine. And it wasn't even what we taste today. We tried a 99 Chard, 99 Riesling, both drinking very well, both in the where you'd expect in the evolutionary state of the wine. And they brought a lot of joy. I remember I tried a 2000, and I apologize for people who heard this story before, 2000 Henry Appellum, Cabernet. It was paired up against a 2000 Chateau Latour.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, the Latour was, in classic sense, still, you know, the better wine, a little more power, you know, the finish, just the fruit profile. Like, you could tell, it's like, okay, most people in the industry, they would pick the 2000 Latour, but the 2000 Appellum belonged in the room. The 2000 Appellum was drinking great. No one took a sip of the Latour and then a sip of the other and were like, oh, what a massive drop off.
Right.
It was a small drop off, but we know the difference in price of the two. And I just remember just being so impressed with the Speck Brothers at that moment.
And that's what we're here for, too. Like, we have had a few moments like that within Experts Tasting as well, where we do introduce, like, we call them international ringers, essentially, within the blind flight and stuff like that. And it is an opportunity for people to taste wines blind up against wines from Ontario. And it goes back to our conversation of Ontario is here and we are producing absolutely stellar wines, and it's, we are beyond having to prove anything at this point. And you know, when you compare to some of our sometimes $20 bottle wines from particular wineries and particular varieties, it's a huge opportunity, and we definitely try to showcase that within things that we do here at Covey.
Do you have any tips, people that are out there and they're at the LCBO, and certainly LCBO, part of it thanks to Donald Trump. That's what I'm not going to say, but there's a lot more exposure now to local wines, something that should have happened 20 years ago. I've bitched about that enough. I don't need to do that here. I'm not going to reheat old material. But is there any, and I know you it's not about playing favorites, but is there any wineries or varietals you would tell people, hey, you know, you're on a budget, you're not going to spend more than $20, $25 on a bottle? I mean, we can wax poetic about Kaluse and Batchelder's single vineyard stuff, and maybe totally. We will. But for, like, just wineries that you appreciate that are banging out some really great product, that's around $20, $25.
For sure. And that's the funny thing that I would suggest to anybody who's shopping in the LCBO, even a common thing that I do is I'm really into Chardonnay right now, for more reasons than not. And it's always a goal of mine to go into the LCBO and change up going into the Ontario section specifically and seeking out that $17.95, $21.95 area Chardonnay and seeing how exceptional it is at that price point. It's unbelievable that you don't need to be buying, you know, super premium international wines just because it says, you know, Napa Valley or Burgundy, whatever it may be. But the Burgundy style wines in Ontario right now for me are absolutely stellar. The Chardonnays, the Pinots, obviously, like I would say, I'm a bit more particular with cool climate regions. Maybe that's just my palate. You know, Rieslings, of course, in the area. I came from Cave Spring Cellars from long ago, and I would say those Rieslings can compare to almost anyone. So those would be my varieties. I would say Riesling, the Burgundy style, Chardonnay, and Pinot are definitely my top my tops.
I would, if I was going to specific producer, I think Featherstone, the Black Sheep Riesling. That's like anything; it's gone up a couple of bucks,
course,
but everything
has
because inflation and everyone has rent and everyone has to live. That's one that sticks out. I think 13th Street. They've got a bunch, and even some of their sparklings, which is, that's more than 25, but the amount of time and attention they put into it, those are a couple that come to my mind.
I would even say, yeah, I mean, obviously I mentioned Cave Spring Riesling, the Montague Vineyard within Enniskillen is another big one. And then the smaller wineries too that are coming up. We had a graduate that started up a winery, King and Victoria, and you know, some of their wines that they're producing out of there are absolutely stellar, particularly Chardonnay as well. You know, Peninsula Ridge, we do a lot of work with them. Their Sauvignon Blanc is an absolute beautiful wine. There's a lot of hidden gems out there, and that's kind of where I say go into the LCBO, and I challenge people to change it up. I know it's easy to get set in your ways of what you like, and once you know that, like, grab a bottle or two. Speaking of ageability, grab a couple bottles of those, put them in your cellar, and you're good to go for a little bit, and then go in there and try something at the same price point that you're looking at. Like you said, you mentioned Batchelder too, like some of the Chardonnays and Pinots that
the large level stuff, as
come
great
on,
as Gamays.
Like, absolutely. All great options.
What I would love to try some point, and I don't know if you do this or not, because usually the stereotype is the wine that's going to get submitted for ageability is going to be more expensive. Mm-hmm. It has to be, you know, because wines that are less expensive, they're made in a different style. They're made to be consumed younger. And we don't need to get into hand harvest and yields.
Course, yep.
and just, you know, and that plot of land is more expensive. And but like, there's economic reasons why.
For sure.
But what I do love, and I've tried it, I'll just go with Cave Springs. Cave Springs Riesling, you can take a $20 Cave Springs Riesling. If you can find a way to throw it away for a decade and forget about it, it's going to be drinking so well. It's one of the things that I love is, can you find inexpensive wines? And if you have the patience and the square footage, you'll find they will be beautiful in a decade.
And I mean, I love that, you know, we talked about in our cellar just moments ago about how subjective the wine industry is. And I would say most wineries, you know, they'd at least do their, you know, their $17.95, $20 bottles. And then, of course, they have their premium stuff. And if that's your price point, have at it. They're going to be absolutely stellar wines. I've recently got into, like, there's the Taz Winery, Malivoir, making stellar wines, like specifically in the Gamay, Chardonnay sections as well. So it is just challenging people to go out there. And like you said, if you have the capacity to forget about it and store it in somewhere proper in your house, let's just say a dark spot in the basement, and leave it for 10, even 20 years, some of these wines. It's fun. Like I said, anytime we've done stuff like this, I'll go back to I4C. We had a lineup out the door from where I was standing pouring these wines. Anytime anyone hears about a wine to potentially try, whether it's at a conference or even, you know, privately at a tasting that you're hosting, if you say you have a wine that's 20 years old, people just get excited about that. And that's, you know, where the wine library is most effective.
Oh yeah, because people are curious.
Absolutely.
You can't be in wine, really into wine, unless you have a level of curiosity. Actually, it'd be funny if you could set up two lineups. Lineup one is a $75 bottle of wine. The other one is a $20 bottle of wine, but is 20 years old. Mm-hmm. I think you would get the 20-year-old lineup would be longer just for the curiosity factor.
For sure. And that's the beauty of wine. Anytime you say it's always subjective and there's always going to be something for everyone. And that's essentially what we're here with. The wine library is just one of many things that we do here at Covey. It's an opportunity for wineries to showcase what they can do. And like I said, there is something for everybody. It caters, whether it's from variety to price point to how old it is. You know, there's something for everyone. And the wine library is just an opportunity for us to say, hey, these 1 to 2 cases that were just accepted in the library, you're able to bring these in, keep it here for its minimum 3 years. But we have wines down there. We have a 1989 Braeburn ice wine from Inniskillen that is basically priceless in terms of a wine, and it's able to be showcased through the wine library and a huge opportunity for people, especially tasting groups. That's kind of where we're catered to, is industry tasting groups, industry events. And we've had a lot of people reach out saying, can I pull one bottle of this, two bottles of that? And then we do collect data based on the health of that wine, and that's given back to the winemaker. So it's a learning opportunity.
By tasting groups, could you be more specific, like for people who don't know, when you say industry tasting groups, what are some of the different compositions that makes up?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are simply industry driven. Like there's just, you know, experts in the industry, whether they're winemakers, wine writers, you know, LCBO consultants, right. Wine media, like people like yourself. If there are tasting groups that you guys get together and, you know, X amount of times, we get a lot of those types of requests. But we had a Rootstock conference in Toronto 2 years ago where we had some wines taken out, you know, various other educational institutions like Niagara College, obviously within Brock, within our own industry here, we've released them for experts tasting, which experts tasting brings in, you know, 125 wine experts from around the world globally that come here to Brock and are tasting through these wines. And then I4C was another example that we released.
What about you? I haven't talked about you. I'd love to hear, when was the moment you realized that wine was going to be a massive part of your future and a lot of who you are?
I would say a lot of it was the people that I met along the way. When I was a student here at Brock, went for business and political science of all things, and actually did a few courses here at Covey and did a lot of our continuing ed courses. Just a starving student looking to get a job, and I ended up getting a job at Cave Spring Cellars in on the 20, working weddings and banquet server, and then made my way into retail, and then eventually met the now current winemaker, Gabe DeMarco, and he's a good friend of mine. And, you know, he kind of brought me in, and I learned under him and under Angelo Pavan. And I would say a lot of it was really the people in the industry that kind of kept me engaged. And then it was always a challenge, the wine industry, which for me was always kind of kept you like wanting more, was all the challenges that come with harvest, that come with producing a high quality wine. You know, it's physically demanding, and it was just an appetite that was really filled through the industry. And then just to produce it, it's something to do with pride too, of being a Niagara resident. And it was just a lot of fun to work from harvest and then produce a high quality bottle of wine.
What year were you political science and business?
I graduated 2013.
Okay. And that's not that long ago. That's only 13 years ago.
Yeah.
How different is... And like Brock has always been the forefront of wine education in Canada. Mm-hmm. So it's not like in 2013 it was a cottage industry. Far from it. But how different is it now versus those days?
Oh, definitely in terms of the in wine world.
Yeah, in the wine world. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, a lot of it I mentioned is community, and I think a lot has changed in those years in terms of, you know, what we know. And I mean, I think the wine world is ever evolving, and I think that's part of what, you know, makes it a lot of fun as well. As every harvest is different, everything is changing. Like a lot has, you know, changed, you know, in the background, let's say. But a lot of it is just subjective to, you know, the year itself, and you know, whether it's weather or if, you know, something happened that year in particular, and the challenges are ever evolving, which I find in the wine world is like I said, it keeps you consumed into wanting more, and the challenges kind of keep you going.
It's interesting about challenges, because you get this in any industry. I work in sports media,
for sure.
And before I was, what's wrong with baseball? Then they got the pitch clock. And, you know, they've fixed a lot of things. Now it's basketball, tanking, all this sort of stuff.
For sure.
And it always happens. It seems with the wine industry, the thing you hear, and then everyone yells and screams about it, is youth. Yeah. And youth drinking patterns. And why are young people not drinking more? And is that because of COVID and everyone is staying at home, or health movements, or White Claw, or this or that? And I'm wondering just your thoughts on that discussion. I think things often get overblown, but just your take, because, I mean, you're here at Brock. I drove here, and I'm like, oh, wow, it's just surrounded by students. What you would say in terms of the wine industry when it comes to people 25 and under?
For sure. I think we talk about challenges. I think, you know, and obviously everything in there is a subjective view, and this is just mine. Obviously things have changed. You mentioned the pandemic, you know, people, you know, sales were through the roof there for a moment. And, you know, now things are kind of going the other way where, you know, we do a lot of research here, like low alcohol wines are becoming a little bit more popular, or de-alcoholized wines. And we do research here through our enologist scientist here at Covey. So, I mean, that's just part, like one of many examples of the challenges that our industry does face. But it's all ebbs and flows, at least from what I can tell. There's, you know, things where, you know, this is a more important topic at this point in time, and then it changes, you know, with the direction of the wind. But it's ever evolving, and I feel like that's what does keep people engaged. At the end of the day, it is, you know, a local industry, and it's something that we always try to promote, is supporting your local wineries and in one way or the other.
Seemed to be there was a bit of a spike during COVID about supporting local, and then it probably went down a little bit. Then Trump came in and tariffs and bye-bye all of the wines from the United States. Felt like there was another spike, elbows up. Again, it's a generalization question, and it's only from your experiences.
Yep.
Where do you think that is right now in terms of, because it's harder here in Ontario than it is in BC, you know, in terms of just selling and pride, which is an odd thing. Another topic I've bitched about before, but just where are we now with that in from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's different too. Like, I obviously know people who are like, oh, I'm not a big wine drinker, but then you have, you know, the category of people who are. And the same goes for, you know, cider, same thing for beer, any spirits whatsoever. I think the people who do support wine, like I've heard numerous people obviously lately being like, oh, I'm trying to do a bit less here, a little bit less there, and or they're just simply not into wine. And then I would ask, like, even friends, I would casually ask, like, what don't you like about wine? That's a very broad term. And then all of a sudden you get into varieties, and it's like, okay, there might be something that you actually do enjoy, you know, whether it's something on the sweeter side or something more subtle like Chardonnay or Pinot Gris as an example, or if you're just into more red wine as well. I've, you know, had people say that, you know, new wine, you know, fresh red wine has given them headaches because of, you know, tannin or sulfur or something like that. So try an older wine, you know, back to the aging wine. And then they're like, oh my gosh, like that was amazing. And it's no longer giving me headaches and stuff like that. So I think it is ever evolving. But I think, you know, obviously I live in Niagara on the Lake. I see the tourist industry live and well every day. There are lots of people who are very much into wine.
So I always say, if you can manipulate your schedule, don't come here on a weekend in July.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, a Wednesday in early May, you're going to hit it. Yeah, weather's
sure.
going to be nicer, and everything's going to be less busy.
Yeah, there's signs everywhere. Like, go and explore, whether it's on bike or in a vehicle. There's, you know, there's so many wineries that you can go visit, and go to the ones that you haven't heard of.
Yeah.
And the new ones that have come in. And I could, you know, name you two or three off the hop that, you know, have
Go.
Recently graduated.
Go. Give some recommendations.
Well, I mean, like I said, King and Victoria, I mentioned already. One of their winemakers is a grad of our program very recently. You know, other small ones put you on the spot. Like, I mean, Taz is producing some absolute stellar wines, at least from what I've been, buying. Malavoir, another smaller winery in the Beamsville Bench area. There's tons in the area. You mentioned Batch Elder, like he's, you know, got his label now, which is second to none, in my opinion.
Releases a mere like 25 different wines a year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By the way, when in doubt, for everyone, if they're just go Gamay. When
for
in
sure.
doubt, you're not going to get the headaches. It's going to be lower alcohol.
Absolutely.
It's less expensive than Pinot Noir. When in doubt, just go find yourself a Gamay.
Yeah.
The impact of Tony Aspler on all this.
So he was one of the pioneers that started this in the very beginning. So he was one of the ones who got it off the ground and made it a thing. Really, all we've done since then is make it a sustainable system, so that, you know, we use a cellaring system now where we know what's down there. I briefly showed you, and I can, you know, send anyone any piece of information of the cellar that we have down there. But none of these kinds of things would have even been, you know, part of Covey if it weren't for the Tony Asplers of the world. You know, Ant Sperling was a big part of it as well. Peter Gamble, Angelo Pavan, Don Zeraldo, all pioneers of our industry. Tom Panichetti was a part of it as well. And it's the foundation that they've built that we even have grapes here, number one. But also at the time, you know, as things were kind of excelling within Niagara specifically, we needed an institute there to support it. And Tony, as an example, has just been one of those people that have been a full supporter of Covey. And like I said, none of this would even be here without them.
Taylor, before we go, again, Cool Climate Oenology and Viticultural Institute, or Covey. Any other things people need to know about Covey in terms of what you guys do, or if you want to just promote what's coming up and just the importance of it when it comes to all things Ontario wine?
We're here to support the industry in any way. Like, I'll start first with our undergraduate program. We're the only ones in Canada that offers a Bachelor of Science undergraduate degree with a co-op as a Bachelor of Science undergraduate degree here in Canada. It's one of our flagship programs here at Brock. We have a certificate in grape and wine technology as well that you can almost get done in a year or two, give or take. So obviously from an undergraduate standpoint, we're here to support the next generation of students going into the winemaking world, whether it's on the viticulture side or the winemaking side. But as the research institute itself, as I mentioned, we're performing research here that is all industry driven. You know, whether it's virus testing, we have an oenologist, an entomologist, and a virologist as well. Outreach is a huge initiative that we do with things like this, whether it's wine library, experts tasting, and continuing education is our third pillar. So any wine enthusiasts out there, we get, you know, the people of the industry who want to do it professionally, but also the people who are just, we call them lifelong learners, and they want to learn the basics of winemaking and have some fun with it, or learn, you know, how Ontario wine is produced. So continuing education is a big part of what we do here as well.
Websites, anywhere people should go, or should they just Google, you know, CCOVII, and they'll
absolutely
find
you. Go brocku.ca/CCOVII. All of our information is on there for all of the initiatives that we do, and happy to help anyone if they want to reach out. All of our information is on there. That's essentially what Covey is here to do, is to be that house for information for the industry, so that it's all about learning in the end. And I would say the wine world is particularly fun to work in because it is a very supportive industry of one another. If we're not all on the same team, we're not going to get anywhere quick. So we're that home for that.
It's a good point. There are certain parts of the world where you can tell it's a little bit more cutthroat. It's a little bit more, if that winery over there fails, that's fine for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is one thing here in Ontario. It's one of the cool things, is that everyone supports everyone. You can go to winery A and they'll tell you, you got to go over to winery B. They're blah, blah, blah. It's pouring beautifully.
100%. No, it's all an industry. It's all a team game in the end. And you're right. We have people like tourists who are obviously going from winery to winery. And if you're not there doing that, supporting the other guy, then they're not going to be doing that to you. It's definitely a unique thing to our industry. And I love it. I think it's a fun energy, and I love that part of the industry for sure.
Taylor, really appreciate this. You know, obviously, I have a relationship with Covey. They've been you know, they were. I was honored a couple of years ago as one of the winning one of the promoter awards, yes. which I was thrilled about. And thanks again to Rick Van Sickle, who got that started. But this, the library, it's really impressive. I love the fact that you guys now, you guys have a couple hectares of land for the students to work on. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to help the next generation of winemakers, the next generation of Ann Sperlings and Peter Gambles and Thomas Batchelders and Kelly Masons of the world.
Oh, for sure.
We could go on and on and on about that. But yeah, just a super cool library. I love what you guys are doing. I think the number one thing I love is that this is a place, a resource to get to try older wines, to get to see what Niagara Pinot tastes like 10 years down the road. So just a fantastic place, and thanks for taking the time.
Very much. Appreciate that very much. And anyone listening, if they want to book a tour, we do lots of tours and tastings these days. Feel free to take a look at our website. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Matthew.
And it's parking lot O, again, if people are coming.
We're in line. I'll send you a personal map to make sure that you can get here.
It's one
properly.
Of the most important things. Thanks again. Thanks again, Taylor.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.